Episode 11 of Top Turtle MMA is brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. Sisu Mouthguards, the most breathable, lightweight, strongest, most durable mouthguard on the market. If you do high-impact sports, you're going to want to go ahead and get yourself the Max Guard. If you do team sports, go ahead and get yourself the Arrow Guard. And if you're a little fella or a little gal, get yourself the Junior Guard. It's for youth sports. You can visit them on the web at www.sisuguard.com. That's SISUguard.com. Sisu Mouthguards brings you Top Turtle MMA. All right, we are rolling. This is Top Turtle MMA. I am David Tremonti. I am joined by Daniel Gumby Vreeland. How are you today, Dan?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing so good. Thank you for asking. This is Top Turtle MMA. We have an awesome show for you today. We will be talking to Zach Cummins, who has a fight at UFC Croatia.
Yeah, he'll be fighting Nicholas Dalby, which is a fun little fight there.
We will also be talking to
Team
Elevation head coach Lester Bowling. And we will be breaking down Mir versus Hunt UFC Brisbane reaction. And we'll, of course, bring you your daily dose of UFC 200 rumor mongering. We are two rumor gossip mongering hounds. All right, that being said, you are listening to Top Turtle MMA. We so appreciate the download or wherever you are listening to us. You can get us on TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, and
SoundCloud, or any really of the podcast streaming services. I know we got people who listen on dozens of different places, so feel free to hit us up on whatever one makes the most sense to you, and hit that download button. You can also email us if you've got some feedback at topturtlemma@gmail.com. You can get me on Twitter at Gumby Vreeland. That's Gumby, V-R-E-E-L-A-N-D, and you can get the show at Top Turtle MMA on Twitter as well.
And of course, you can find us on our parent website, the mothership, if you will, MMA-manifesto.com. We're on the podcast tab, obvi. Anyway, I think all the heavy lifting's out of the way now, right?
I think that just about does it.
All right. Mir Hunt, go.
Speaking of heavy lifting, I always like to do that after a heavyweight fight. No, after that fight, my instant thought was back to our interview with Mark Hunt about a month ago now at this time, right? We talked a little bit about Mir, and one of the questions I asked him was, you seem to get a lot of walk-off knockouts. How do you know? And he was like, when you land it, you just know. Or he said something very ominous like that. And I was like, man, well, I hope you get one against Mir, because, I mean, that would be fun to watch. And it was. Just classic Mark Hunt. And I know it pissed some people off that he walks off like that, because it looks so...
Why would that piss someone off?
Well, I've just seen guys be like, that's very assumptive to not think that, you know, to think that the referee doesn't know how to do his
job. He's been right every time.
I mean, yeah.
If Fightmetric had a stat for walk-off knockouts and being right about said walk-off knockouts, he's 5 for 5.
I mean, he's not pulling like a Paul Harris and like pretending he finished Dan Miller when he didn't.
Right.
And the knockout guy, the guys he's knocked out have been so impressive with the walk-offs. I mean, like, the Frank Mir one is great, but he also walked off
Roy Nelson.
I mean, a guy who just doesn't get knocked out. He knocked out Chris Tuscher, which is one of my favorite of his walk-off knockouts. And Tuscher, if I remember right, even though he's not like a big UFC name now, he was a pretty hard guy to knock out. He is a Brock Lesnar prodigy. So I mean, like, these knockouts, phenomenal. I love the walk-off knockout. What I like about it too is he's sort of got that Warriors mentality where he's here to beat you, but he's not here to hurt you. It almost reminds me of Damian Maia's jiu-jitsu.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, Damian Maia's jiu-jitsu, his principle is that he's here to beat you, but he doesn't want to do you harm. And it was just really interesting to me when you compare that to Frank Mir's mentality, where leading up to the fight, he said, I don't care if you tap, I'm willing to snap your arm. It's just like that polar opposite. You got a guy who doesn't want to hit anybody more than he has to, and you got a guy who's saying, I'm happy to do damage to your limbs if I need to, which I guess is a fine mindset for MMA, but it's just like very interesting contrast and very interesting that it went down that way.
So, you know, there was some talk afterwards. Brian Stann, I think, came out and said he thought, you know, it might be in Mir's best interest to retire here. You know, I want to say, what's he lost now? Maybe 5 out of 7-ish? I could check that.
I think
that
it's 5 out of 7 because I think he had a 4-fight losing streak, 2-fight win streak, and then he lost, I think it's 6 out of 8, because I think he lost Arlovsky too, and that was 5 out of 7.
I'm looking it up now, but what are your thoughts on Mir? Where does he go from here, if anywhere, but the commentating booth?
Yeah, so I'm going to say that I think the commentating booth is the best idea, but not because I don't think he can hang. I think you could feed him somebody like, you know, somebody like a Derek Lewis, right? Derek Lewis is fighting Gabriel Gonzaga, and then hopefully fighting Roy Nelson if he gets past Gonzaga. Mir could fight against Derek Lewis. He could fight Gabriel Gonzaga. They're like fun fights for him left. But I think the difference is there's nothing for him to prove. He was one of the best heavyweights the UFC's ever seen. Okay, and we could sit here and debate where he ranks in all time. But he's like a multiple-time title challenger. He's held the belt before. He held the belt.
I think he has the most subs in heavyweight history. I mean, I have to assume.
I mean, his sub game is amazing. He's got, you know, Nogueira's arm on his mantle place. He's got Tim Sylvia's arm on his mantle place. I mean, like, this is a guy who's had some amazing times in the heavyweight division, come back from adversity. What more does he have to prove? You know, I definitely think he could still fight at heavyweight. He could still be a top 15 guy constantly. But why?
He has lost 6 out of 8.
6 out of 8. I was right. 4-fight losing streak, 2-fight win streak, 2-fight losing streak. Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. So, I mean, I just don't think he's got anything to prove. So why keep going?
No, I agree. I mean, I don't know. Selfishly, I'm a Mir fan. I wouldn't mind, like you said, see him fight an up-and-coming heavyweight. Not that there are a lot of them in this world. But other than that, you know, if you told me that Frank Mir was going to be a fill-in and end up fighting Cain Velasquez, Verdum, Travis Brown, I'd say no thanks.
I'd be a little worried.
Yeah, I'd be a little worried, actually.
Not that he's not good or he can't hold his own or he can't take punishment, but, like, I don't know. These last two fights have just kind of made me feel like he's not top five material anymore, and there's not really a chance that it's going to happen again.
Agreed.
So why keep going? He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody.
You know what would be nice is, you know, he was the main event headliner, co-headliner, against Brock Lesnar at UFC 100. Maybe his retirement, his swan song is at UFC 200.
That'd be interesting.
You know, and someone not top 10.
Yeah, and we can get into those 200 rumors, too, because I heard a couple of good ones. But let's say that for later.
All right, fair. Where does Mark Hunt go from here?
Oh, God. It's so tricky because, you know, he's gone back and forth with wins and losses here and there. He looks so good sometimes. He's had trouble with the top of the division. I mean, isn't his record, like, career record, like 12 and 10?
I thought it was maybe 16 and something. I'll check.
I think it's like 12 and 10, if I'm mistaken. I could be completely wrong. I know when he got to the UFC, he was 6-7. Impressive, not like mind blowing. What about like.
He's 12 and 10.
12 and 10, okay.
12, 10, and 1.
Point for Gumby. What do you think about like the winner of like Overeem Arlovsky?
Sure. I'd love to see him in Overeem. I'd love to see him in Arlovsky.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, and this is obviously a conversation for a different day, but I like Arlovsky in that fight. But regardless, the winner of that matchup would be really fun for him. He could fight somebody like Josh Barnett, too. Okay.
That's a good one.
Especially if you got a Japan card coming up. Throw those two on a Japan card, they'd sell the place out.
Yeah, either of those rematches would be good. Hunt has lost to Barnett and to Overeem in the past, but
That's pride then.
That's old Mark Hunt. Yeah. One was in Dream, one was
that's
in
That's 6-7 Mark Hunt.
Exactly.
I would take either of those two. I mean, really, the heavyweight division, like we said, is in need of some fresh faces. So, I mean, whatever comes up for those two, whether it's retirement, whether it's a fun fight in the future for Hunt, I'm down for everything.
I thought of one, which was if C-level Kane fails to show up at UFC 200 versus Travis Brown, just throw Mark Hunt in there against Travis Brown.
Yeah, Hunt-Brown would be fun, especially to see how he deals with Brown's length. Yeah.
What would you think of if somehow Travis Brown gets injured in the lead-up to UFC 200, Hunt-Kane? And Kane would just cardio the shit out of him. But
I mean, that would be an idea. Hunt has worked a lot on his takedown defense in the past. I know that he's been drilling that stuff. I watched a couple of videos on him drilling it so that he could be ready for Mir. I mean, if he could stop the takedown, and I don't mean every takedown. Kane's going to get him down. But if he could stop the first one or two while he's still got a load in the gas tank, and then, you know, hey, you can never count him out with that right hand.
Yeah, and that's what makes Mark Hunt fun.
Imagine Cain Velasquez shooting a double and just eating an uppercut on the way.
I can imagine. It seems fun.
Yeah, it does. I mean, and that's not to say that I hate Cain Velasquez. I like Cain Velasquez. Just like, I mean, every time Mark Hunt steps in there, it's a whole lot of fun.
He's a big bowl of fun. Why do we keep calling Mark Hunt fun? I don't know. All right, let's talk about the mega prospect battle on that card. Your boy, Australia's own Jake Matthews, fought Johnny Hollywood Case. And it was a pretty good back and forth for the first round or so. And then I think you started to see Jake Matthews start to take over.
Yeah, and you know what? It's sort of what I thought about Jake Matthews. His grappling is better. And I think that was the big difference. He did show his hands a little bit. And I know he said it in the post-fight interview that he was proud of the way that he got to show his hands a little bit. But I don't think we've scratched the surface yet of what Jake Matthews can be. The kid's 21 years old and he out-grappled a guy who's on a four-fight win streak in the UFC, or was on a four-fight win streak in the UFC. And not only that, is he submitted him.
The RNC, the rear naked choke in the third round.
15 seconds left, which you just got to, like, love the grittiness. Because, you know, I don't know. If I'm looking at it, I probably have him winning that decision 2-1. And I think that, you know, he probably could have just held him there for 15 seconds, but he was going for broke the whole time. He was not leaving it in the hands of the judges, as they say. So, you know, you got to give him props for that. And apart from the one setback he's had where he just got caught, I mean, this is a kid who looks like a killer. I mean, he looks like Australia's, you know, best hope at a title right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking of this over the weekend because, I mean, I hate to keep doing the compare every prospect to Sage Northcutt game, but I think he's a little more well-rounded than Sage Northcutt.
He would demolish Sage Northcutt. And so, I will go on record saying that. If you ever paired those two up, dude, he would grapple the hell out of Sage Northcutt.
So it's like, hey, UFC marketing team, you know, he's a good-looking Australian. Hollywood's been using good-looking Australians to star in every fucking major film of the past 10 years.
He kind of looks like a muscly Justin Bieber.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he should be on all the posters. He should be getting all the hype. And I think honestly, after this one, I think this was kind of the test for them. You know, remember when they, honestly, in McGregor's second fight, they were like, we think you're good. Here's Max Holloway, who we also think is good. And then they knew, okay, strap the rocket to this kid. He's for real. And I think Johnny Hollywood Case versus Jake Matthews was a bit of that. Matthews said, I think in the post-fight press conference, he always wants to fight in Australia. I think the UFC's probably seeing, you know, gold signs go off or cash registers light up. I don't know what metaphor I'm looking for here, but I think they could make him the face of Aussie MMA.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I do think he's going to have to get out of Australia at some point in time, though.
To train, or to have a big fight?
To have a big fight. I mean, like, they don't continue to do big fights all the time in Australia, right? Like, don't get me wrong, the Holm-Rousey fight was enormous, but they're not going to do enormous cards like that.
Was he on the Holm-Rousey card or no?
I don't believe so. You would have to go back and fact check me on.
Intern check it. He was. He beat Akbar Ariola.
Ariola.
Not a body part.
That's last name in all of MMA.
I agree with you. He will have to come to Vegas eventually.
At some point in time. Yep.
All roads lead to Vegas. But fun fight. Love when two big prospects match up. And then I think the most newsworthy third fight and co-main event, actually. I'm not ranking these in order, but you know, the other big fight on the card with implications within its division was Neil Magny weathering the storm in round one against Hector Lombard and getting a finish really at the end of round two, but bad reffing, got the finish in round three. Just awesome, awesome performance by Neil Magny. Very happy for him.
Yeah, and you know, he's a great guy, and he's one of those guys, too, that's, I mean, if you cancel out the one loss he has to Damian Maia, what are we talking now? 9 in a row if you cancel that one out?
Yeah, I think it was 8 in a row, lost to Maia, and then came back to beat Gastelum. Oh, no, was it 7
in a row? Lost to Maia, yeah. Gastelum, in Lombard.
And Lombard.
I mean, like, 9 of the last 10 fights are in the UFC and wins, and there's wins over Gastelum and Lombard in there. Like, I looked at it beforehand. On the MMA-Manifesto ratings, he's ranked lower than Lombard. He was in the also vote out of our top 10, and Lombard was 9. And, you know, I'm on that panel, and, like, I still made that mistake. You know, like, I would have to go back and see what I submitted for a vote, but, like, why is he not ranked higher? Like, I had him win in that fight.
Since 2014, he is 10-1.
Why does he still not have the respect? Is it because he's, you know, a couple of those fights were against guys you've never heard of.
Actually, he reeled off three wins after losing to Maia. He beat Eric Silva, if you remember, by
Eric
decision.
Eric Silva, too. Although he just took a nap, too. Eric Silva did.
Yeah, I'm not saying Eric Silva's anything great. But
that's still impressive.
Gastelum and Lombard, back-to-back wins. Very impressive. Yes. Those are two names for him to build his career off of. I don't know. Part of me going into the fight, and maybe even still, sort of think of it is March Madness, almost like Neil Magny is that, I don't know, 12 seed that makes a run and then loses to the number one or two seed eventually.
But he's also the 12 seed, too, that you should have ranked higher all along.
True.
You know, like, if you are a March Madness fan and you're watching this year, he's the Gonzaga. Gonzaga's ranked 11. They probably shouldn't have been ranked 11. They could have been higher. They're still in it. Are they going to win the whole damn thing? Probably not.
I don't know shit about college basketball, and I was actually going to say Magny reminds me of the Gonzaga of MMA, because isn't Gonzaga always like the plucky underdog?
They
every
are
year?
Always yeah. the plucky, and so, they are again this year. They're the only team left that's seeded. They're seeded 11. They're the lowest seed left out of 16.
How do you, I mean, I want to see it. I'm not sure I absolutely know which way it would go, but let's just go off, like, let's say the top four. You know, how does Magny stack up against a Rory McDonald, a Tyron Woodley, a Johnny Hendricks, a Carlos Condit? I don't know that he's there yet, but he's almost
he
feels like
he deserves the shot. He deserves the shot to prove whether or not he's there.
And he's still developing, I think, at the same time, too.
You know what? That's the part that's the most interesting to me, is that he continues to get better and better. And what I think would be the most interesting of those fights for him, you know, scrap any matchup that already exists. If I had to look at that top four or five and say, okay, well, who does he have the best chance at? I actually like him against Condit. Condit's a boxer, but could Condit stop the muscliness of Magny? You know, like, Magny shot a couple of takedowns in there. He looked pretty good in the top game. You know, that's a question that we haven't seen the answer to with Condit, right? Because people thought, you know, Robbie Lawler might wrestle him up because, you know, he didn't want to stand with him. He didn't. But, and when was the last time we saw Condit, like, really wrestled up? It's been a while. You know, we have, but it's been a while.
Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah, Johnny Hendricks, right? Probably. So it's been quite some time. Could Magny do it? And plus, Magny's length, I think, on the feet might give Condit some troubles. So,
interesting.
I would love to see him against Condit. I mean, obviously, you know, you got all kinds of rumors and matchups that have already happened in that division. So in order to talk about him fighting any of those guys, you got to see the results of all these matchups. But certainly interesting, at least.
Definitely. And I think, you know, Lombard, we didn't really know what to expect coming off the juicing suspension. Still looked pretty jacked, if you want to go by the eye test.
He was huge.
You know, gas tank's still an issue for him. No difference there.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think Lombard looked any different than he always has. And you know, I said that I thought he would in the pre-fight. I thought he would look slower. I thought he would look smaller. He didn't. He looked exactly as big as he always does. He looked exactly as strong as he always did. And he looked exactly like he had the same kind of gas tank as he always did. So I didn't see any change. So it shouldn't be written down that Magny beat, like, you know, a modified version of Hector Lombard. He fought what Hector Lombard always has been.
Great point. So, you know, I guess the other big talking point out of that fight, of course, was the referee's decision to let the fight go in round one, which I think was the right decision. I think Magny was intelligently defending himself, and even the early knockdown in round two, John McCarthy talked about that actually over the weekend, that Magny put his hand out to brace his fall, which is something referees look for, so it's not like the lights were out or he wasn't intelligently defending himself. And then, of course, the vicious ground and pound Magny laid at Hector Lombard to end round two. The fight absolutely should have been stopped. I think anyone watching it would agree with that. But you know what? We talked to Leister Bowling about it.
Yeah, and Leister's got some really good insight on what he thought of the reffing there. Other things about Magny's future and his contract. There's so much fun stuff here. And if you were a Neil Magny fan or you were interested to see where Neil Magny's going to go, this is the interview you want to listen to.
So me and Gumby will shut up about this fight, because who better to talk to about it than Leister Bowling? And this interview is brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in the lovely, quaint town of Amherst, Massachusetts. Classes 6 days a week. No-gi submission grappling is the specialty. Truth be told, I train there. Gumby trains there. And they also happen to sponsor our show, and they also happen to bring you our interview with Leister Bowling.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Top Turtle MMA. I'm here with my co-host Dave Tremonti, and we are talking to Leister Bowling, head coach of Team Elevation, who just had an enormous weekend. How you doing today, Leister?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Excellent. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Neil Magny, because Neil Magny had one of those absolutely unforgettable performances this weekend. Talk a little bit about what was going through your head as a coach after that round one.
You know, honestly, our game plan was to weather the storm in the first round and then come back strong in the second and thirds. We just didn't want that storm to be a hurricane, you know. So that round one was definitely a tough one, a little, you know, more damage than we hoped to take. But I could tell when I talked to Neil, he was, you know, he got hurt in that first round, but he wasn't, he still seemed fresh. You know, he wasn't breathing hard. He was okay. And Hector, on the other hand, looked like he was, it was the beginning of the end. So we felt pretty confident going into that second round. You know, and obviously it was, second round was going really good, and then he got dropped again. So, you know, Hector's got that power that everybody wishes they had, I think. So.
Yeah, and then so one of the big topics coming out of that fight is the actual reffing of the fight, and it's kind of a, you know, it was a weird back and forth because you're almost happy that he didn't have the quick hook when Lombard rocked Magny in the first round.
Yeah,
but then in the second round, I mean, as a fan, I thought that could have been stopped. What were you saying in the corner?
You know, in the first round, was very frustrating because Neil was hurt enough that I wouldn't have argued if the ref stopped the fight. But what I was upset about in the first round, if you go back and rewatch it, Neil was covering his ears with his gloves, you know? And Hector was punching him in the gloves. So those punches weren't getting through. And then you realized he wasn't doing damage, and he just hit him in the back of the head like 8 times. And that, I mean, no warning, no stopping the action, nothing. And I was pretty upset that the ref didn't, you know, at least call the back of the head blows, you know what I mean? So if it would have got stopped in the first round, that would have been the only thing I was upset about. But obviously Neil was hurt, and, you know, I don't want that ref's job. So, you know, if he would have chose to stop it, the only thing I would have protested were the back of the head shot. In the second round, I can't believe he didn't stop the fight. I mean, knowing what I know about Neil, Neil's a very nice guy, you know? So if he knows he's got the finish, he's not going to continually hit the guy as hard as he can, because Neil truly does never want to hurt anybody, you know? Like, that sounds crazy coming from a cage fighter, but, like, he doesn't want to hurt people, you know? So if he's got him in a position where he doesn't feel like he has to lay those damaging shots to finish the fight, he didn't, you know? And the referee, I mean, he should not be allowed to ref a fight again. I mean, he has no concern for fighter safety. That was terrible. It was great to see him get the double leg in the third round and then go right to mount to a triangle and finish the fight, you know, the top mount triangle. But, you know, in that process, Hector got a huge cut from an elbow, and he took damage that he didn't need to take if the referee would have done his job, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was such a big night for Magny. I feel like it was kind of like a real coming out party for him. I mean, Dana White tweeted after the fight that he loves Neil Magny. Lombard, obviously, probably, I would have to say, the biggest name that Magny has beat to date.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
So as head coach, and where does Magny go from here? What would you like to see him do next? Who's a possible opponent that you'd like to see him matched up against?
I'd like to see him fight any of the top five guys. I'd like to see him renegotiate his contract and get paid more so that he doesn't have to fight 6 or 7 times a year to be one of the top 10 fighters in the world. He should be getting paid like he's one of the top 10 fighters in the world. So I would like to see that. I'm not his manager, so that's not really my place. But as Neil is moving up in the ranks, I don't want to see him fight guys like Hector Lombard 5-6 times a year. So I would like to see him, you know, make the same amount of money that he's making per year now, but maybe with half as many fights, 3 or 4 fights a year. Neil's going to want to stay active, but, you know, 6 or 7 fights a year, you know, when you're fighting guys in the top 10, you're just asking for damage. And I think at this point in his career, doing that would probably shorten his career. So I don't want to see that.
Yeah. And you see a lot out about contracts right now, you know, some people fighting him out into the end. You'd want to think that the UFC would want to lock him up as quickly as possible, being a fast rising star. Do you know how many fights he does have left on his contract?
I think he has one left.
So we could imagine that the UFC would probably want to lock that up as quickly as possible.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, I think he probably should start negotiating now. And don't get me wrong, Neil wants to be in the UFC. He's a company man. I don't see Neil testing free agency or anything like that. I just think, you know, Neil loves the UFC. They've been very good to him.
I think that everything just needs to come to a head. I mean, his first eight fights in the UFC were under the Ultimate Fighter contract. So he was making, I don't know, I'm sure you guys could look it up, but I think six or eight fights in, he was still only making 12-12.
And certainly his value has ever increased over the past year or two. He's a guy that's going to go out there and fight, and, you know, he's proved he's a warrior.
And he never complained about that because, you know, and none of us did because he was fighting, you know, lower-tiered guys. But in the UFC, you know, there's no such thing as an easy opponent. Guys like Hector Lombard, I mean, that's a scary opponent. That's the scariest guy in the UFC.
Now, you have been working with TJ Dillashaw since his permanent move to Team Elevation. Recently came out that Faber is going to get the next title shot against Dominic Cruz in June. Again, this is just a fan's perspective here, but Dillashaw lost the title on a decision loss. It seems to us like... Split decision loss. It just, sometimes the UFC doesn't make sense from an outsider's perspective. Cain Velasquez loses by guillotine in the third round, instant title rematch. Chris Weidman ground and pounded in the fourth round, instant title rematch.
How about Burrell and TJ?
Exactly. Away. And then Burrell missed weight on what was supposed to be.
And then TJ still said yes on 24 hours notice to a new opponent. So, you know, even from an insider's perspective, sometimes the UFC just doesn't, some of this stuff doesn't make sense, you know, but what can we do? You know, we're not, I don't know what we can do about it. It's hard to watch.
Where does TJ go from here? Do you advise him to wait it out and see if maybe one of those guys gets injured? Do you have him take a fight in the interim, or what would you like to see happen?
You know, that's up to TJ and his managers. He has a great management team behind him, and, you know, I'm sure they'll figure out what they want to do. TJ's a guy that's always in the gym, so, you know, if one of those guys gets injured, which, you know, this day and age is not unlikely, I think he should be ready.
Yeah, he definitely should be ready, especially with Cruz's history there. Let's talk a little bit about Matt Brown. Matt Brown training with you guys. Made a huge change to try to add some Damian Maia jiu-jitsu. And actually, Magny talked about adding some Damian Maia jiu-jitsu as well, going to a seminar after Maia got the best of him. How is that changing the dynamic of around there? Are you guys heavier on jiu-jitsu now, or is it more of the same?
No, it's the same. I mean, we have a schedule that we've been doing for the last 3 years. The only thing that's really changed when Muscle Farm came into play is all of our training's under one roof now. So before, our schedule was the same as it is now, but guys were having to drive around for jiu-jitsu, for strength conditioning, for mitts, stuff like that, and now everything's under one roof, so it makes it easier. And Matt had been out here for like 3 out of his last 5 training camps anyway, so he was very familiar about, you know, how we did things and what he was getting. So jiu-jitsu is very important, wrestling's important, striking's important, it's got to be balanced though, you know.
So you talked a little bit about putting it all under one roof. So we talked to Drew Dober last week, who's one of the fighters who fights out of your camp, and he talked about how important it is to have everything under one roof so he doesn't have to be traveling everywhere. Do you think that that's a huge benefit, or is it just more of the same and just happen to have the corporate funding now?
I think it's a huge benefit, but not only is it under one roof, the biggest difference that a lot of people don't understand, especially if they haven't been to an regular MMA gym, is we don't have a curriculum that Joe Schmo off the streets can come join our gym, you know, like it's invite only, and, you know, not necessarily invite only. We've had a lot of people reach out to us and want to join the team. And if they have legit credentials and they have an elite background in something, we give everybody a 2-week trial period to see if their attitude fits, their skills fit, they don't have an ego. You know, we test anybody out, but we're trying to keep anybody on the team has to be an elite level of something. You know, you can't just be watching this on TV one day and be like, oh man, I've been in a lot of bar fights, I'm a good fighter, I'm going to do this, come join our gym. Where you can do that with most MMA gyms, you know, you can be like, oh, I was a, you know, high school wrestler and hadn't wrestled in 10 years, but I fought a lot at the bars, and I'm going to go join this MMA gym, and you can just go sign up. You're not going to get that with us. Ours is very private. There's no kids classes. There's no cardio kickboxing classes that, you know, You come in, you have to have a key fob to get in, and it's purely athletes only. It's private, 40,000 square foot facility, and it's just amazing, you know?
So one might say you're not teaching kids jiu-jitsu on Sunday, making gun signs with one hand and balloon animals with the other.
That's true.
So this might be a little bit out of left field, but you used to coach Shane Carwin. Is there any chance of him coming back and just punching someone's face in for us? Because we're huge Shane Carwin fans.
Yeah, you never know with Shane. I mean, he might get an itch. I know he's been back in the gym a little bit, and, you know, I honestly couldn't tell you if he's just back in the gym because he misses it or if he's back in the gym because he's got the itch or what. But, you know, Shane's an absolute nightmare for anybody. So, you know, I don't know. He's one of my best friends. And I truly, it's not like I'm keeping anything from you either. I truly don't know what would be next for him. Like, I would have to say most likely not going to happen. But you never know.
All right, I'll leave off on you never know, and he's back in the gym training, and just let my hopes.
He's not really back in the gym training either. I mean, he's come in and hit mitts a couple times, and like, you know, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Is it still scary to watch him hit mitts?
Oh yeah, but it's only about 30-second intervals at this point. So,
all right, that's fair. Well, Leister, we cannot thank you enough for the time. You're doing great things. You're doing great things at Team Elevation, and we're fans of almost all your fighters. So we'll be on the lookout. I think it's going to be another big year for you guys.
Awesome, man. Hey, I appreciate the support. Thank you, guys.
All right, so there you have it, Gumby. Leister Bowling, he's the fucking man.
Yeah, he gave us a lot of really fun stuff there, too. Because in addition to getting, you know, the coach's view of things, he also gave us some, like, very candid stuff about, you know, Magny's contract, whether or not he thought that fight should have been stopped, and, you know, some other fun stuff about TJ Dillashaw getting passed up for the title shot. So, you know, all very fun stuff from Leister Bowling. Hell of a guy.
Hell of a guy. So, you know, we'll move now to kind of the news of the week, I guess you could say. And we've been on this journey since episode one for us, tracking what we projected to be the UFC 200 lineup, what could headline, who would be on the card. And they've released two confirmed bouts, one rumored. For confirmed, you have a middleweight offering of Gegard Mousasi versus Derek Brunson.
Yeah, and that's like sort of, to me, a battle of who deserves to start being considered top five.
Agreed. And you also have a heavyweight offering of Travis Brown versus Cain Velasquez.
I would comment on that, but let me just, I mean, does anybody expect anything other than regular C-level Kane to just go in and do C-level Kane things?
So you're predicting Kane...
I don't like Travis Brown's chances at all in that fight.
Well, okay, and what are your chances that Kane actually makes it to the fight and doesn't get injured?
Slightly better than Travis Brown's chances of beating him.
Okay, fair. But those are two, you know, I'm impressed with what we're finding out so far on the card because, you know, you have a meaningful fight at middleweight between, let's call it, you know, a more established star in Gegard Mousasi and maybe someone trying to make a name for themselves and make their first push to the title in Derek Brunson. So I like that. And then with Kane, you know, it's almost like he couldn't make the rematch they were going to give him for the title. And so
this would set it up.
Yeah, this would reset him up. And I like that, you know, make him earn his way back into the title. We talked about it a little bit with Leister. It's like, hey, if TJ Dillashaw doesn't deserve an immediate rematch, I get it, star power and whatnot. But that being said, make a guy earn his title shot back. So
yeah. And I think, too, when you start to think about how this card is shaping up, I would imagine these two fights, one of them is the last, you know, Fox Sports 1 prelim, and the other one is the first pay-per-view.
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking Gegard Mousasi versus Brunson. I mean, we'll have to wait and see the lineup. But
I would think that that's the main event of the prelim.
Yes, that's the way I thought about it.
It's got that feel to it. It's like two guys ready for the top five, probably can't help sell pay-per-view points yet. And then you got two guys who are established, but maybe, you know, a little bit away from a title shot. I would say maybe not the first pay-per-view fight because they might save that for Mr.
Like,
CM Punk.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like,
so it might be the second or third. Yeah.
And then you go into your double co-main event, you know, mega whatever it's going to be.
Some kind of super fight, which, I mean, we're always talking about. So,
and I, we believe, you know, we were talking about it off air, you know, if they do have GSP in pocket, so to speak, I think they'll announce that at the Fox card on April 16th to a wide audience, or maybe even wait a week and say, hey, tune into the pay-per-view, Jones versus Cormier, there'll be a big announcement. If you remember when they signed CM Punk, that's exactly how they did it. As the FS1 pre-show was ending, they said, tune into the pay-per-view, there's going to be a big announcement, and it was CM Punk.
Yep. So, I mean, they know how to pull people in, so I guess we'll see if that happens. So I gotta kick you back to something you said earlier. You said you had a rumor, too. What was the rumor you had?
I don't know.
You had two confirmed matches.
And and then the rumor, thank you, was, you know, Ariel Helwani broke this via Twitter. Really, Top Turtle MMA said it the day before, but really, to be honest, I was just speculating. But it looks like they are going to do Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz.
Touch butt round two.
Let's go. What's crazy to me is they're saying it might be at 170, not confirmed yet. But to me, it's like, okay, did they do this? Here's where my immediate thoughts go. They're screwing over Frankie Edgar again, which you called in episode one.
I called in episode one. I said, this kid doesn't get a title shot this year, and not because he loses and loses his chance at it, but because they just find ways not to give it to him.
So I think they went and they looked up their metrics, and they said, how can we make UFC 200 the biggest show ever? And Nate Diaz just, you know, it is what it is, business, the fight business. A Nate Diaz rematch, they believe, will sell better than a Frankie Edgar or Jose Aldo fight for the featherweight title.
But here's my question, too. I agree that having Nate on there would be super helpful, but why couldn't you do Conor McGregor versus Frankie Edgar and then Nate Diaz versus, like, Robbie Lawler or Nate Diaz versus GSP or Nate Diaz versus
Rafael Dos Anjos?
I mean, even if you didn't give him a title fight, having him be that third fight with Conor being one of the title fights, that would sell even better, I think. Nobody wants to see this rematch, do they?
I just watched the movie The Big Short, which is all about the housing crisis of 2008 and all the dirty politics that went on behind the scenes to even make that happen and why the American public ended up suffering for it. I think we're going to get a documentary 5 years from now about the falsehood of the Conor McGregor market. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, did the UFC force this on Conor because they thought it could do the best business? Or did Conor call up the UFC and say, nope, you know what? I want my chance at him again. Because let me just say, at the post-fight press conference of 196, Conor was very honest. Everyone's praising him for how he handled the loss. His reaction was, I think it's time I defend my belt. He said that.
Yeah.
That's when we last heard from Conor.
So this is why it doesn't make sense to me, because from my perspective, Conor wouldn't ask for this. The UFC shouldn't want this. Like, you know, it's like a senseless rematch at a guy who went up in a class and was like, look, it turns out I can't go up in a class. So he's admitted that. How can that be marketable? Like, I don't understand how that can be marketable.
Okay, so here's my other conspiracy theory. Did they look at this and say to themselves, Conor on a two-fight losing streak is very bad for the UFC, and they believe that there's a very good chance that Frankie McGrinder just grinds out Conor over five rounds and either submits him or grounds and pounds him or takes a unanimous decision win? Did they say to themselves, if Conor's going to lose twice in a row, we rather it be to Nate Diaz, where there are these built-in excuses?
He's 170.
He has Conor's number. And then, this is, again, real conspiracy theory shit, but do they make Frankie Edgar fight like a Max Holloway or even a Jose Aldo, and then Conor's ready to go again in September, and they hope that Frankie isn't, so they avoid Frankie again?
I mean, it's a hell of a conspiracy theory, because, like, I do think Frankie Edgar is a bad matchup for him, because he's got, you know, some pretty sharp boxing. He's got great transitions to his takedowns.
Awful matchup for Conor.
I think he's one of the worst matchups. I said that in the first show, but I also said that I think Conor keeps his belt the whole year because I think Frankie doesn't get his shot. And you know.
So, okay. So let's just land on this, though. I don't know. You know, this past weekend, I watched the Mendez-McGregor fight and then the Aldo-McGregor fight. And I don't know, the way he escaped, like, Mendez on a full camp, I think would have beat Conor.
I disagree. I mean, like, You can say what you want about what Mendes would do with the full camp, but he went out there and said he was not the better man that night. He doesn't know what a full camp would do. I mean, like, he looked like Chad Mendes always looks, right? Like, did he look different?
He did. His hands were down. I mean, unless you want to say the body shots.
Because he tried to hold down a guy who's as powerful as Conor McGregor can be. I mean, Conor McGregor's a big 145er. I mean, like, he's got a bunch of size to him for 145. You try to hold him down for, like, two rounds and try to land as much as you possibly can, I think he gassed himself out.
I gassed himself out because he wasn't in shape, though.
I don't know about that.
I don't think you roll out of bed and just put on a wrestling clinic. I mean, I think you still need to have a full camp for that.
But I also don't think he was that out of training. I mean, don't get me wrong. Fight camp training, different than regular training. But if you don't think he was gearing himself up, he even said he'd been preparing for Conor McGregor in case somebody drops out.
All right. Well, you know what? I don't want to actually play the speculation game because we'll never know. And I'm a McGregor fan, so yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love the fight. What I guess I'm trying to say is I watched the Mendes fight, and then I watched the Aldo fight, and part of me was just like, man, was the Aldo fight, the Mendes, you know, ascent, and then the Aldo championship grab at the top, was that the last of, you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
yeah,
are we now going to see a bit of a downfall?
I know when I said, though, that Conor beat Aldo and he did that in such devastating fashion, I would stop doubting him. So I'm going to stick with that. I'm not going to doubt him yet. He fought one guy at 170. I'll use the excuse.
Don't use that excuse. You heard it from Lester Bowl. You heard it from
Zach Cumming, who we got up next.
Who we have up next, and the fans will hear it. But that wasn't at 170. It's just their regular weights. I said that two episodes ago.
But even then, you could say he's at 155. I mean, he's
and
still
what would
not
Habib, and what would Habib do to him at 155?
Oh, he'd kill him.
He'd murk him.
He'd kill him. He should be at 145.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's okay. So we can agree on that.
Yeah, all right. I don't even know what we're arguing or agreeing on anymore. So there are your UFC 200.
I actually had another UFC 200 rumor that popped up recently.
Ooh, hello.
I heard they were going to give a little play to the old school in the UFC history books. I heard, and this is, you know, coming from, you know, probably unreliable sources, but I heard Diego Sanchez and Joe Lozon.
Okay, that's so funny you say that. I buy it completely because I'm going to take this from a wrestling perspective, but WrestleMania is the biggest show of the year for WWE. I've made this comparison before because that's what UFC 200 is for them. Doesn't come around every year, but it's going to be a mega show for them. And one thing that WWE always does for their wrestlers is they get everyone on the card that they like for the payday. They love Diego Sanchez because he's a Tough One alumni, still going strong, and the UFC loves them some Joe Lozon.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's so entertaining.
So,
and has either ever been in a boring fight?
No, of course
I can't
not.
Think of one.
So I was going to say that, actually. If I had to bet money on it, I think both Diego Sanchez and Joe Lozon will be on UFC 200.
Could you
some
imagine
respect.
If that was the Fight Pass prelim?
That's a great Fight Pass
you
prelim.
You have to buy Fight Pass if that's the case. You have to buy it.
All right, so that's a good rumor right there and one I completely buy. So that's kind of your UFC 200 news for the week. And I guess the only other thing I wanted to touch on, Gumby, was, you know, we talked about it with Lester Bowling, him saying that Magny has one fight left on his contract. That's a very relevant fighter at 170. And last week it came out, on the MMA Hour, give credit where credit is due, that Rory McDonald, was in contract talks with the UFC. They couldn't work anything out, and he's going to fight out his contract. What's very interesting about this to me, again, from the conspiracy theorist within me.
You got a lot of those.
I do. But the way you hear Rory McDonald break it down, he was scheduled to fight Hector Lombard. And then the contract negotiations started going a little south, and all of a sudden, with no explanation, the Hector Lombard fight went away, and they said, we want to give you Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in June.
You're saying they won a 2-5 losing streak.
Yes, going into that. Or, you know, the UFC's known to do this. They roll the dice. They either have a 2-fight losing streak, so better negotiation and bargaining power for them, or Rory beats him, reclaims himself as the surefire number one contender and a next title contender.
It's a great sell.
And it's a great sell, and he would have just headlined a Canada show, and they'll pay him what, you know, they have to pay him. But they're rolling the dice with this matchmaking and letting him go one more fight.
Yeah. I mean, they're rolling the dice a little bit, but in that same token, I feel like the TriStar team has always had like a really good relationship with the UFC. They like when they need a short notice fight, they go get a TriStar guy. A lot of times, especially in those Canada cards, you know, they've always had a good relationship with GSP. I mean, they've always had a good relationship with Furious himself. I can't imagine him going elsewhere.
I don't want to imagine him going elsewhere. He's a UFC guy through and through, you know.
Where else could he go?
Bellator would certainly pay him a shit ton.
Who's he going to fight?
Benson Henderson.
Him versus Benson Henderson.
On a Friday night?
And now we're done.
Yeah. But what does he care?
They're not two guys who sell fights well, though.
That's true. Well, I mean, listen, they paid Matt Mitrione a six-figure salary.
Yeah,
they're going to pay Rory McDonald.
I mean, they will.
It's GSP kind of 2.0-ish.
Yeah.
Not as big, obviously, and he's a former title contender and someone the UFC has put some marketing dollars in. It would be a huge pickup for Bellator. That, to me, Rory McDonald is just my opinion.
Would be their biggest pickup.
I completely agree. Because he's also 26.
100% agree.
So, you know, that's something that we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on. And that fight is just, wow. I was already excited about it.
Yeah. Because now you're going to see Rory McDonald empty the tank. And that's a fun thing to watch.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So, with that being said, we will now transition to our interview with Zach Cummins.
Yeah, Zach Cummins fighting Nicholas Dalby in Croatia on April 10th, which is a fun fight. If you saw Dalby's last fight off, he wound up drawing due to some point deductions, but he's a really fun fighter to watch. And Zach Cummins, since he's gone down to welterweight and he's been at with the UFC in welterweight, he's been a lot of fun to watch. He's 3-1 with only a loss to Gunnar Nelson, so definitely this is one you want on your radar.
All right, so with that said, we will now cut to our interview with Zach Cummins.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with my co-host Dave Tremonti, and we are here with UFC Croatia fighter Zach Cummins, who fights on that card, which is April 10th, against Nicholas Dalby. How's the preparation going for that fight, Zach?
Oh, the preparation is going great. You know, weight's coming down. Fight camp's going great, getting a lot of good looks. Just excited to get back in there and show all my improvements.
Yeah, and we saw that you were doing a little bit of work at Syndicate MMA with Coach John Wood. John Wood's a friend of the show. What made you make the decision to go up and start working with those guys?
I met John, back when I was on the Ultimate Fighter. He was on the opposing team with Kim Jones. But, I've always had a lot of respect for the guy. And lately, a couple of my friends have actually moved out to Vegas and training out there and stuff. So, I made the decision to go on like last second, and I just kind of had a good place to stay. You know, I had a good relationship with those guys, so I hit them up and they welcomed me with open arms. And so I just kind of ran over there just to kind of get some different looks and get my mindset changed from my coaching role and the role I have right now into more like the athlete and competitor role.
And you mentioned, too, that your weight was going really well. I know you've been working with a nutritionalist and a performance coach.
Basically, I met Tyler Mitten, who is with Power Athlete HQ and the Melee Way. I met him a while back throughout the Ultimate Fighter tryouts. And just, over time, we built a friendship and training partners a little bit. And when I decided to make the cut down to 170, he really just kind of begged me to give a chance. He promised me newest stuff and everything, and that's all happened. He asked for it. I gave him the shot, and he made my first cut down to 170 effortless. It really surprised me how easy my cut was, and I felt great. Went out, performed great in my UFC debut. So ever since then, I've just kind of put all my trust and faith into him when it comes to my weight and my training, and he hasn't really prove me wrong yet. So, he's done the same thing with a lot of my teammates like James Krause and Tim Elliott and stuff, and helped them as well. So, I've got a lot of respect for him, a lot of trust in him, and that's kind of how it went down.
Yeah, and so you mentioned a little bit about making that decision to go to 170. You fought as big as, 205 in the past. So a lot of people are going the other way, that they're going up in weight class because of the new restrictions. What made you make the decision to start to cut down to 170?
I mean, I've always fought at 205, 185, but I didn't have probably the cleanest lifestyle. I did a lot of partying, didn't really eat my diet wasn't as clean as it should be. And so, I mean, I always walk around with a little bit extra weight on me. I'm naturally kind of a bigger guy. And I knew that if I wanted to give myself a solid run with the best guys in the world, I think 170 is the weight that I would perform the best at and the weight that I wanted to do that at. Knowing that, you know, I could always go back up to 85 and probably perform just as well, but I wanted to kind of prove to myself I can make the weight, prove to myself that I could get down there and compete with, you know, the best guys in the world at that weight class. So is this something I kind of wanted to try? You know, a lot of people said I should have been down there, and I told them they're crazy. There's no way I could get down that, you know, that low. And finally, is this something I just wanted to prove to myself that I could do it and really just commit myself to a clean lifestyle and you know, get down that weight class. So, you know, I'm happy there. I know I can make it, but I also know that now I can make 185 extremely easy with a good, healthy camp and stuff. So if I do decide to go up in weight in the future, you know, it won't be hard at all, basically.
You know, you mentioned it earlier. You were on The Ultimate Fighter. I think it was season 18, if I'm not mistaken. But Jones and Sonnen were the coaches. That season was loaded with talent. You had Uriah Hall, Kevin Gastelum, Clint Hester. What are some of your memories of being on Tough? And do you keep in touch with any of those guys?
It was season 17. I always have to go back and think to you. Speaking of which, Adam Sella, who was on the show, was in my gym over the weekend and came up and sparred with me. So, you know, I see, you know, so it's nice to see him. You know, I talk to a lot of coaches. You know, every once in a while, I see Uriah and Kelvin and Clint, you know. So we all, most of us kind of keep in touch, you know, maybe not as much as I'd like, but, you know, we see each other at events or, you know, we'll hit each other up just on social media or text or whatever it is. But, you know, I still talk to quite a bit of the guys from the season. You know, whenever you go through an event like that, you really become close with everybody. And I feel like our season was it was a pretty special season. Just everybody was there for the same purpose, and no one was kind of that drunken idiot, I guess, that you know on the show, but you know, we were all there to get in the UFC, to get better and to improve our careers. And you could really tell that where even when people out of the tournament, you know, they still were there to get better and become good training partners and really take the most from that experience that we could. So everybody on the show got a chance in the UFC, which was a pretty special deal. So yeah, we really just kind of became really close with each other after that. And, you know, it's been a few years, but I know a lot of them still keep in touch, and I try to keep in touch with as many guys as possible.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, too, being that they had so much talent, and not just so much talent, but so many guys working hard. You also talked about having worked with a couple of Jones's trainers. You know, you met with John Wood, who was working with Jones at the time. How about Shale Sonnen? Do you ever see or hear from Shale Sonnen?
Well, I talk to Shale all the time. I mean, little stupid things, he texted me the other day or a week ago on how to figure something out on a stupid phone. So, I mean, I definitely consider myself very close to Shale. You know, we always kind of check in with each other to see how each other's doing, you know, just the flyest. It doesn't have to do anything with fighting. So I definitely, I mean, you know, Shale's had his ups and downs and stuff through his career, but he is honestly one of like the best human beings I've ever met. He will do anything for you. He's a very, very nice guy and stuff. And I just, I know that a lot of people see the televised person, personality, and you know, a lot of it's an act and everything. It's a character that you know that he's created and stuff. But the Shale Sonnen, the person, is a great person, a great human being, and a great friend to me. So yeah, I talk to him all the time. I all the other coaches, you know, I went out while I was in Vegas. I went over to Strength of Tour and trained with Jamie Huey, who is one of the boxing coaches, and saw Coach Clayton Hires over there this past week, so it was really nice to kind of get back and catch up with those guys as well.
Seems like Shell is a good guy at heart, but I think a lot of people get that some of the stuff he says, you know, all part of the show and to build up fights for sure.
Yeah.
He's an excellent podcaster, that's for sure, too. I'm curious to get your take on as someone who's jumped around in weight classes before, obviously so much going around right now about Conor moving up from 145 to 170. I'm guessing you saw the fight against Nate Diaz, as did most of the MMA world. But what are your thoughts on the challenges that lie ahead for him? Should he stick at, let's say, 155, or even when he comes up to 170, which is the rumor right now that he'd be fighting Nate Diaz at 170, in the rematch?
I'm one of those where, I don't know, I think I'm a little more of a realist where, yeah, he fought at 170, but let's be honest, he's, you know, it's on short notice. He walks around close to 70, so I really don't think it was that much of a difference between him going to 70 and him going to 55. Obviously Nate's gonna be bigger. It's harder for him to get down to 55. You know, he couldn't be a 45 pounder. He has competed at 70, but when it's all said and done, you know, he went up and fought a 55 pounder. And they both, this was around their walk to around weights, you know, and maybe Nate had to drop a little bit, but it's still a huge difference from him stepping up and fighting a 70 pounder like myself. You know, that is a huge, huge difference. So I think if he's going to do it again, they're going to have a rematch, it probably should be at 55, where I understand those, you know, like the Brian White killer bodies cut weight, but I do think it has a lot to do with your mindset of, you know, it's a process that you go through before you fight. And I think cutting some weight is healthy for mentally. You know, it gives you a little bit of a struggle and something to fight through. It helps the cardio. You know, you have to get those little few extra workouts in and everything. So I think if they're going to do it again, you know, 155 would be better for both of them. I think it's just going to put them both in a better shape.
Very interesting. And you are a master weight cutter at this point, so I think your opinion is quite valid.
I'll be the first one to tell people not to do what I do. I'm really dumb half the time. I cut way too much weight. I've had a bad streak with injuries lately, and then when I get hurt, I'm not able to train. You know, I'm not doing what I should be doing and keeping my diet, you know, my diet going, so that my body blows up a little bit heavier than it should, and then I have to cut all this weight. So I'm really working on it because I don't want to do that, and so I'm working on it as well. So I'm always telling people not to do what I do, but I think some weight cutting is healthy.
Well, Zach, we cannot thank you enough for the time. We appreciate it, and we wish you the best of luck in Croatia. It is April 10th.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. I'm excited for the fight, and I appreciate you guys letting me on.
All right, so there you have it, Gumby. Zach Cummings.
Yeah, really fun guy to talk to. Very talkative, not secretive at all about what's going on. It's fun to hear that stuff about the old toughs, too, because, you know, I'm always very interested to see what really happens in there, how people really feel about it. And he let us know. And that was, like you said, one of our favorite seasons of Tough. So many good prospects. I mean, we didn't even mention, you know, Dylan Andrews came off that season, Luke Barnett. There's like a lot of fun guys on that season.
That season, it's like in my top three because you had Uriah Hall just like spinning, elbowing,
poor Adam
kicking.
Sella, yeah. Too. And he mentioned he's training with Adam Sella, but poor Adam Sella, that'll get replayed for the rest of time.
So I think that season had some of the funnest fights. And then you go to like a season five, which was Nate Diaz's season.
Oh, when he faced Gambo in the finals.
Which the finals were such a letdown.
Gambo dislocated his shoulder.
He dislocated his shoulder within like a minute. But the a lot of the fights and a lot of the talent there, I mean, you had Joe Lauzon, Cole Miller, Manny Gamburian, Diaz.
Just good stuff there.
Good stuff there. So, yeah, those are two of my favorites. All right, well, another week in the books, Gumby. Good episode 11. You can catch us, Top Turtle MMA, at Twitter. You can email us, topturtlemma@gmail.com. Keep hitting the download button, Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, SoundCloud. You can basically get us wherever there is a podcast that is being streamed. All right, we thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next week.